The next case is number 014162. Rashad Jackson against Illinois Medicare, Medicarc Incorporated.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Your honors, appellant views this appeal as presenting a very simple issue. The district court granted summary judgment on the appellant's claim for deliberate indifference to his need for medical care based on a misunderstanding of a discrete but important fact in the record. The court believed that the police station to which the defendant, Mr. Howard, was transporting Mr. Jackson was the same facility as the Cook County Jail. Now, the difference between the two facilities is important for this case because the Cook County Jail is a police facility where medical attention is available to people who require medical attention.
How did the driver know where he was going? Was he given an address, or was he following a police car someplace?
The evidence is that the driver knew he was to transport the Mr. Jackson to the police facility at 71st Street and Cottage Avenue. He did follow the police to get there, but he wasn't.
So he was given an address, and he followed a police car to where he was going.
That's correct, Your Honor. The difference between the two facilities is important. The police station to which Mr. Howard was taking Mr. Jackson, the 71st Street Police Station, does not have medical care available. And the basis for the district court's holding that Mr. Howard was not deliberately indifferent was that Howard believed, after learning that Mr. Jackson had overdosed on a full bottle of prescription pain medication, and in fact seeing the empty bottle of prescription pain medication, Howard believed that he was taking Mr. Jackson to a place where he would see a doctor. In fact, that was based on a misconstruction of the evidence, the trial court's misunderstanding that the police station and the Cook County Jail facilities are not the same facility. Now, the trial court made this mistake sua sponte. This was not anything that was argued by either side because it's in fact not true. Everyone agreed that the police station to which Mr. Jackson was being transported was not equipped to provide him medical care for his overdose. So taking the evidence and the fact in the light most favorable, as must be done on a motion for summary judgment, the facts that were before the district court were that the defendant, Mr. Howard, was informed that Mr. Jackson had overdosed on an entire bottle of prescription pain medication. Mr. Howard had actually seen the empty bottle of prescription pain medication and therefore knew that it was a credible statement by Mr. Jackson that he had overdosed. Mr. Jackson pleaded with Mr. Howard to take him to see a doctor, and rather than do that, Mr. Howard took the plaintiff to a facility where no medical care would be provided.
Mr. Howard was also directed by the police officers to go to a certain address and directed by the police officers to follow him.
That is correct, Your Honor. It's plaintiff's position, however, that under the applicable law on deliberate indifference, if a person recognizes under the applicable standard should recognize that there was an immediate need for medical care, simply following directions doesn't make it any less indifferent. In this respect, there are cases of one officer's failure to intervene to protect against an excessive use of force by another officer. There are cases of one officer.
In this case, however, the Medicare driver operates under the direction of the police, doesn't he?
Pursuant to the contract between...
He goes where the police tell him to go and does what he picks up, delivers where they tell him to go. Something like a cab driver.
Well, I would respectfully disagree with the analogy to the cab driver.
Well, being an old cab driver, you're probably... I feel it. I'm on sound ground. I went where the guy who was paying the fare told me to go, but you go ahead. The police have control over where the driver goes.
The police give instructions to the Medicar driver.
Right.
And many times the police will travel in the Medicar.
Many times they do and many times they don't. But the fact is the driver operates under the control of the police. If the guy's simple answer, either yes or no. Either he's on a frolic of his own and go wherever he wants to, or he has to do what the police tell him to, which?
Well, I can't give you a yes-no answer because it depends upon what the situation is. Inside of the Medicar...
You mean he can make up his own mind as to where he wants to take the person in the Medicar?
He cannot make up his own mind as to where he is supposed to take the person in the Medicar under the police's instructions. However, there is a wide range of things about which he can make up his own mind. And inside the Medicar, if there is no police officer present, the Medicar driver is the person with the custody over the detainee.
Was there a police squad in front of them, or traveling with them?
Yes. The police officer providing directions on getting to the police station.
Might have been a little difficult to take an alternate course under those circumstances.
Well, it may or it may not. He may have...
What do you suppose would happen if the driver suddenly veered off and started off going someplace else?
That's not evidence in the record, but, Your Honor, presumably...
Well, give it a good shot. What do you think would happen?
Presumably the police would follow.
They'd not only follow, they'd stop them cold in the spot and come follow us.
Well, Your Honor, presumably they turn their lights on. He might yield, the driver might then pull over and explain, this person in the back seat is in dire need of medical care. I'm taking him to the hospital. Follow me. That would be an example
kind
of...
Kind of reverse the roles. Well, that's an interesting...
Under the contract company has with the police department, a police officer is supposed to be in the van, am I correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Whose obligation is it to ensure the police officer gets in the van?
Well,
is the contract clear on that?
I do not know if the contract is clear on that.
Okay. Police officers should have been in the van.
It was contemplated at the time that Chicago and Medicar initially formed their relationship that a police officer would be in the van. Apparently, after the contract was first signed, and it was to be a one-year contract that was in fact performed over a three-year period, that practice did not continue to be followed. We know that because there's evidence in the record that adjustments were made for the understanding that...
Well, the policy was established for the safety of the driver of the Medicar. Wasn't it?
Well, there's probably several reasons to that.
Well, that's essentially the reason.
And Medicar's position, Your Honor, is that the policy was established certainly for the safety of its driver, but also because it didn't want its driver to make any decisions, even if he believed that the passenger in the car was in dire need of medical care, it didn't want its driver to do that.
Is there any evidence whatsoever that the driver knew there were no medical facilities at the facility to which he was driving the individual?
Well, Your Honor, as I said, this is not an issue that was put before the trial court. This is something that the trial court decided sua sponte. So the driver never argued that I thought there was medical care available at the police facility.
How long did it take to get from where the arrest was made to the police station?
My understanding is that it took between 10 and 15 minutes to make that drive. Getting back, Your Honors, to the facts that were present for purposes of summary judgment, we have a driver in custody. We have this driver informed that the passenger had overdosed. That information given to the driver was credible because there was an empty bottle of medicine at the scene. And the driver decided not to provide medical attention for that overdose. It should be presumed from the fact that lay people understand that overdoses are significant, that the driver knew that the clock was ticking for the treatment of medical care. The trial court got that wrong because the trial court assumed that the police station to which the plaintiff was being transported was in fact a place where medical care was available. It was not. Under a corrected version of the facts, summary judgment should not have been granted on the driver's liability. The trial court briefly granted summary judgment on the liability.
Do you know how close the nearest medical facility was?
I believe it was approximately equidistant to the police station, but I do not know that for a fact. The basis of the court's grant for summary judgment in favor of the employer, Illinois Medicar, was twofold. One, the court believed there was no underlying constitutional violation by Mr. Howard, which is not correct in light of the fact that the court misconstrued the evidence. And secondly, the court believed that the issue had not been properly pled. That issue we briefed, and defendants do not seem to have joined us on that issue. Instead, the issue that they take is the propriety of the underlying policy. And in this regard, it's the plaintiff's position that the policy is essentially that even if you believe that a recipient in your transportee in your car requires medical care, you cannot provide that for him. That is a must policy, and it essentially mandates deliberate indifference. I see that my time is over. Unless the court has any questions, we would ask that the case be remanded for trial.
Thank you, Mr. Kimovich. Ms. Campbell?
May it please the court, Alyssa Campbell of Williams, Montgomery & John on behalf of the appellees, Matthew Howard and Illinois Medicar. In response, I think that a problem with the appellant's presentation and approach is their position that this is a simple case that turns on this one issue of whether the trial court, rightly or wrongly, made a statement about Mr. Howard knowing that the plaintiff would get medical attention at the police station. I think the first reason that this is an incorrect point to rest the case on is that there's many, many hurdles that Mr. Jackson had to overcome to ever create a triable Section 1983 case against either the corporate defendant or the individual defendant, and we've gone into those many different issues and hurdles at length in our brief, and unless the court has questions about a particular issue, I won't focus on that. Instead, I'll address the issues that were really dealt with this morning, and that's on this point of where was Mr. Howard taking Mr. Jackson? What did Mr. Howard know or not know? And how is the situation supposed to work out? Well, to begin with, I don't believe there's any evidence in the record that Mr. Howard knew for a fact that there was or was not a doctor available at the police station. In fact, the evidence, and this is pointed out in my brief on pages 15 and 16, is that Mr. Howard had only ever transported an arrestee once before in his career at Illinois Medicar and was frankly confused about where exactly he was taking him. This was the colloquy at his deposition. Question, so you knew when you were going there that you were going to drop him off at the police station, is that correct? Answer, yes, because when I asked her, meaning an officer at the scene, I go, is this a police station? She says, yes, it's an arrestee that needs to be transported to jail. Question, how did you know that the address was that of a police station? Answer, because I think, I'm not sure, but on the pager it gave a precinct number of the address, I'm sorry, of the police station, and so I saw a precinct there, and question, and the word precinct, answer, yes, I'm thinking it was prison, or an arrestee that needed to be transported to a jail or police station. This is from Record 71, Exhibit E, pages 30 to 31. This colloquy, I think, shows that at least in Mr. Howard's mind, and of course, we're dealing with a subjective standard here. In Mr. Howard's mind, he was just not sure exactly where he was taking this person. And you know, the reason, let me address one other thing. There was a question about whose responsibility was it under this contract, this DSO, to make sure that there was a police officer in the van. I believe the reasonable reading of this DSO, and it is Exhibit H to the plaintiff's exhibits in support of his response to the summary judgment motion. I don't have that record site right now. But this DSO was issued to police department members. The purpose, it says, is to inform department members regarding the transportation of arrestees. And under number two, procedures, it provides a list of what actions an arresting officer must take. And under section it says, the officer requesting the transport service, his partner, or another sworn department member at the scene of the request will be required to accompany the arrestee by riding in the SUV, the van, while the arrestee is transported to the nearest appropriate wheelchair accessible department detention facility, etc. So the DSO required the police officers to make sure they were in the van.
How many police officers were involved in this whole thing?
Basically, there were three. There may have been more, but basically three involved. The two arresting police officers, and there was a sergeant who I believe came on the scene a little bit later, but who was there at the time that the van arrived.
What was the nature of the arrest? Battery? Was there anything else?
I believe that it started out being a drug-related arrest, but to be quite candid, I don't recall the details of that part because it's irrelevant, but it did ultimately end up to being an arrest regarding Mr. Jackson's assault of the police officers. He was biting them, and he had whipped out the arms of his wheelchair and was trying to hit them. So it was quite an emotionally charged arrest situation, and Mr. Jackson was upset.
Was Mr. Jackson's mother at the scene?
I don't believe so. Judge Ripple asked if there was any evidence in the record that Mr. Howard knew that a doctor was not available at the police station. I don't believe there is any. There's also a question about if there was any evidence as to how far the nearest medical facility was. I don't believe there was any evidence as to that either, and I think that...
How far was it, Cook County Jail?
I don't know, and I don't think there's any...
What's the address of the arrest, you know that? Well, don't waste time and find it. We can find it.
I think the reason that that wasn't a focus and something that's not in the evidence is that part of the reason is that the plaintiff never proffered any causation evidence. When the defendants contended that there was no Section 1983 claim asserted here or no viable claim, one of the plaintiff's responsibilities was to proffer some evidence that the delay, and again, we're talking about a 10 or 15 minute delay here, that the delay in getting medical treatment somehow caused his problem. And there was no evidence provided of that, and that might be part of the reason there's no evidence as to how near or far a medical facility was. Also, the reason perhaps that the evidence is lacking here is because Mr. Howard's position and the position of all the arresting officers was that none of this was known until after Mr. Jackson arrived at the police station. The only reason we're getting to these questions about did he know there was a doctor at the police station is because we're indulging every inference in Mr. Jackson's favor to believe his side of the testimony, which is contrary to everyone else's testimony, that he had advised.
That's what you're stuck with.
Well, of course, but this is why when there's a criticism in the plaintiff's, in the appellant's brief about Mr. Howard not asserting below whether he knew or didn't know that this a doctor was available at the police station. Well, the point is that we've indulged all these inferences for the plaintiff's sake. We've accepted his version, arguendo, that he had this discussion in these officers and arguably Mr. Howard's presence about taking pills or not and wanting to go to see a doctor or not. And what we, the appellees, are saying is that if we're going to accept his story, then we have to accept the whole story, which is that he not only said he wanted to see a doctor, but that the police officers told him he would see a doctor when he arrived at the destination. And there was just nothing that happened in that 10 or 15 minute car ride from the time when the police officers made the decision that immediate medical attention wasn't needed at that moment. It could wait for 15 minutes. There was nothing that happened in that interim 15 minutes that should have alerted Mr. Howard to that there was some new or different problem that the
police... Remember who gave the estimate of the time?
I'm sorry?
Do you remember who gave the estimate of the time that's been accepted?
Mr. Jackson, that's whose estimate I'm using for, again, for argument purposes. My time is over. I'd ask the court, for the reasons stated this morning and also fully argued in our brief, to please affirm the summary judgment in favor of Illinois Medicare and Matthew Howard. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Campbell. Your time, sir, had expired, so we will take the case under advisement.